Welcome to Make Peace with Food. I'm your host, Emily Lavoie, a certified eating psychology coach. I own a virtual private practice, and I work with clients all over the world, one-on-one and in group programs, to help heal their relationship with food and improve body image. Here at Make Peace with Food, we believe food is not your enemy, that eating should be fun and bring you joy and pleasure, not stress and guilt. To keep this a safe space, I will try my best to avoid mentioning numbers like calories and weight, as well as other potentially triggering content, but you know yourself best, so please avoid any episode topics that may not feel helpful to where you're at in your healing journey. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes. It's not a replacement for medical or mental health advice, diagnosis, or treatment, nor does it provide a client or patient relationship. Consult your own provider on any changes you're thinking about making. Today's episode is brought to you by my one-on-one coaching. If you're curious about becoming a client and want to learn more about what it looks and feels like to receive support in healing your relationship with food and improving your body image, go to my website, emily-lavoie.com, to schedule a free 30-minute Zoom consultation. Welcome to episode 2. In today's episode, we are going to discuss the term diet culture. I feel like this is super important for you to have a really good grasp and a complete understanding of, because it is a term you are going to hear me use probably multiple times in every single episode. And I feel like when people hear the term diet culture, they understand it in a really small way, like a drop. But I want people to have a complete understanding for all of what diet culture entails and every single place it might show up in our life. A lot of times, I think that people's initial thought when they hear the term diet culture is the pressure that they feel to have a body that looks a certain type of way. And yes, that is a very small piece of a portion of what diet culture is. This is something that I go over with every single one of my clients, typically in the very first session. And before we dive into the word diet culture, I want to take just 1 minute to talk about the word culture. So the best way that I have found to explain the term culture is I'm going to try to paint a picture for you to see in your mind. So stick with me. Imagine like this cartoon drawing that like a five-year-old could do. And in this drawing, there's three fish, okay? Two fish are swimming one direction side by side together. And there's then one single fish swimming the opposite direction. And they're going past one another. And the single fish says to the two fish as they pass one another, "Hey guys, how's the water?" All the fish continue swimming on along in their opposite directions. And the two fish that are swimming together, one says to the other, "What the hell is water?" All of that to say, culture is constantly surrounding us. It is the water we're swimming in. It's the air that we're breathing. It's the thoughts that we're conditioned to think. It is sometimes brainwashing us without our knowing. And that's how diet culture is. We live and breathe diet culture. We're swimming in it. It's on every single commercial. It's on the radio. It's on billboards. It's in movies. And what I want to do today by defining this term is open your eyes to it. I want you to be able to see it. I want you to take the blinders off. Not only do I want you to be able to see it, I want you to be able to call it out like, oh my gosh, that's diet culture. There it is again. And it's over here too, because what diet culture does is it kind of makes us a victim. And I know for myself, I have certainly been a victim of diet culture in the past. And I want to say that all of my clients have also been a victim of diet culture at one point or another during their life, probably multiple times, honestly. but I don't want you to ever be a victim of diet culture again. So we have to understand where and when it's showing up in our life. So now that you have a decent understanding of what culture is, let's go ahead and dive in and define the term diet culture. I came across this definition by a gal named Christy Harrison, and I'm going to read it in its entirety to you, and it's kind of broken down into four parts. Christy Harrison is the author of two books that I highly recommend reading. One is called Anti-Diet, and the other is called The Wellness Trap. I'll link to both of them in the show notes if you're interested. So, diet culture is, one, a system of beliefs that worships thinness and equates it to health and moral virtue, which means you can spend your whole life thinking you're irreparably broken just because you don't look like the impossibly thin ideal. Next, diet culture is a system of beliefs that promotes weight loss as a means of attaining higher status, which means you feel compelled to spend a massive amount of your time, energy, and your money trying to shrink your body, even though the research is very clear that almost no one can sustain intentional weight loss for more than a few years. Three, diet culture is a system of beliefs that demonizes certain ways of eating while elevating others, which means you're forced to be hypervigilant about your eating, ashamed of making certain food choices, and distracted from your pleasure, your purpose, and your power in life. And lastly, diet culture is a system of beliefs that oppresses people who don't match up with its supposed picture of quote-unquote health, which disproportionately harms women, femmes, trans folks, people in larger bodies, people of color, and people with disabilities, damaging both their mental and physical health. I've had a handful of clients, and once they've seen this entire definition and they're taking it in, sometimes people do have somewhat of an emotional response when they realize the complexity of what diet culture is and all of the different ways it creeps into the nooks and crannies of their life. So if you are feeling any type of way right now, feeling emotional, I also see people have a lot of anger come up. And I actually think it's kind of cool when anger comes up when we realize diet culture has conditioned us to think and behave in a lot of the ways we think and behave throughout life. We can use that anger in the future to get to a better place. So we can use that anger as motivation to keep healing and keep calling diet culture out and keep working to make peace with food and keep working to heal our body image. So the next thing I want to do is kind of circle back to each of the bullet points, each of the four bullet points that were the definition of the term diet culture, one by one, and kind of have a conversation about each individual bullet point. So if you listened to the first episode already, we kind of discussed how our culture worships thinness, and that is visited in the definition of diet culture's first bullet point. But I want to expand on that even more. Yes, we definitely live in a culture that worships thinness, and that shows up in people sacrificing their health in a lot of ways and changing the way that they eat in order to pursue thinness. And so often we're conditioned to think that thinness and health are the same thing, that if a person is thin, then they are also healthy. And if a person is not living in a thin body, well, then that just means that they're unhealthy. And that's just so far from the truth. But unfortunately, that happens in our society, and our society definitely, I don't know that it's necessarily just come right out and said, but people in this world who live in smaller or thin bodies are definitely worshipped or respected more. And there's something moral about that. They are, more respected and more quote unquote right and doing the quote unquote right things. They must be eating the quote unquote right way and exercising the right way and doing all of the right things. And that's just not the truth. People in thin bodies, there are people in thin bodies who are unhealthy. There are people in thin bodies who have diseases, and there are people in thin bodies who have symptoms that are not being managed properly. There are people who are thin that do not sleep or prioritize sleep, get enough rest, are addicted to drugs, don't manage stress, don't exercise or move their body ever, eat far less than enough. Or there are also people in thin bodies who eat a substantial amount of food. There are people in thin bodies who eat almost no nutrient-dense foods. And a lot of that has to do with genetics, the genes that they inherit from their parents, grandparents, about how their body composition is going to be. And sadly, I see people who are living in thin bodies, but wish their body was thinner. It's never enough. In a lot of ways, it's sort of like money. We might set ourselves a goal to have a certain amount in our savings, but the bar is always going higher and higher. You always need more and more money. It never feels like, well, we have enough to maybe just relax and take a deep breath. And when it comes to bodies, it's almost like I see people who are pursuing intentional weight loss maybe set a goal and they hit it, and it's then, you know, all of the magic things that they thought were going to happen once they achieved this weight, like the sun exploding and rainbows popping out and unicorns flying around everywhere. It doesn't happen. So it's got to be, I have to lose more weight. It just never feels like we're meeting this goal, and what we think is going to happen never happens. But I also see people who live in bodies that aren't necessarily thin by our cultural standard of thinness, truly thinking that there's something wrong with them, and they spend their entire life putting so much energy into chasing thinness, but it's always a moving target. It's never achievable. And for a lot of people who are genetically not in thin bodies, even if they were to ever attain it, it would be at the cost of their health. They would be engaging in incredibly unhealthy behaviors in pursuit of this impossibly thin ideal. And then they feel like there's something wrong with them. They feel broken. They feel like a failure because they can't achieve this quote unquote ideal body that they're chasing. Moving on to the second point, it's discussing how diet culture promotes weight loss as a means of attaining higher status. I definitely have seen people lose weight short term because we haven't quite cracked that code yet. We being the scientific community, the research community who is constantly researching, trying to shrink bodies permanently, they have yet to figure out how to do that. But when people do lose weight short term and then end up gaining the weight back, I know that they feel like they are more respected, or they have achieved this higher status as a human being by short term losing weight. And that comes about in receiving more attention. Maybe it's more attention from people of the opposite sex. Maybe it's they receive more compliments and comments about their appearance. Oh, you look so great. Oh, wow. I know that I've had clients who say that when they are at their heavier weight, so people, clients who have weight cycled several times, gone on and off diets, gained, lost, gained, re-lost the same weight over and over and over again, they say that it really hurts when, you know, they're receiving all of these compliments on their weight loss journey. And then when that fails and the weight starts coming back on, the compliments stop. And they feel that. And I know that there's these stupid fashion rules that don't exist. Like, there's not a fashion police that if you weigh over X, you can't wear stripes or bright colors or certain patterns, but they follow these rules. Like, some fashion police is going to come and give them a citation or arrest them. So I know that sometimes when people are in a larger body, they want to wear really baggy clothes and they think that that's hiding their body, or they want to wear black or dark colors. But regardless of your body size, you can wear bright colors, you can wear stripes, you can wear florals, you can wear patterns. There are no rules. And I think fashion is this really cool way to express yourself. And when you meet somebody, it's kind of, you can use fashion to make some impressions and give people an idea of who you are and your personality as they're getting to know you through fashion. And I think that's really cool. Kind of getting off track here, but I definitely know that there is something that people feel who have lived in a larger body and then gone to making their body smaller, even if it is just short term, that they just feel more confident and less invisible, that people notice them, which is really sad and heartbreaking. And so the amount of time and energy and money that people spend chasing thinness, when I think about myself and my previous history with chasing thinness, gosh, the amount of mental space and thought capacity and brain energy that went into meal prepping and, oh my goodness, reading labels at grocery stores. Like, a trip to the grocery store would be 3 or 4 hours. And I would sometimes just feel overwhelmed and come home empty-handed. And the amount of time I spent researching the quote unquote right way to eat, it was consuming the majority of my time and really cutting into how I was able to show up in life. And definitely stole so much happiness, time, energy, and money from me. And I see that happening for so many people. And we will get into the research in future episodes of what the last 150 years of research on intentional weight loss has continued and continued and continued to prove over and over and over again about, yes, we know how to shrink bodies short term. We have figured that out, but we have yet to figure how to shrink bodies long term. And so I'm looking forward to getting into that in more episodes with you. Another way I sort of see that show up, or another way I hear that show up sometimes, is when people are out and about in public, if they live in a larger body, they kind of feel compelled to maybe order the salad at a restaurant, or maybe they feel compelled to order like the quote unquote healthier food option and almost make it seem like they are actively pursuing weight loss in order to be accepted by other people. And kind of like putting on this show, because there's a lot of pressure that that's what they quote unquote should be doing, even though that's maybe not what they want to order and that's not what is going to be satisfying to them. And I also know that this happens, that if a person is in a restaurant and they live in a larger body and they're eating the salad, people will just like walk by and make comments about what they're eating. Like, oh yeah, good for you. You'll get there. Keep going. You got this. You're doing so good. Stay on track. And it's like, I truly believe that nobody should be making comments on other people's bodies or other people's food choices. People don't need someone else patting them on the back for making quote unquote healthy food choices. So if a thin person can eat pizza in public, or a thin person can be out in public enjoying a donut and still be viewed as quote unquote healthy, like a pizza or a donut isn't destroying a thin person's health, then a person in a larger body should also be able to eat pizza. I feel like I'm hating on pizza and hating on donuts, but should still be able to eat pizza or donuts in public and not feel like they're doing something quote unquote wrong, or they're destroying their health, or you shouldn't be eating that. It's just, it's really yucky. So moving on to the third section, kind of overlaps with what I was just saying, but certain ways of eating are demonized while other ways of eating are elevated, which means, yeah, people are spending so much time and energy being so hypervigilant about their food choices. And oh, I see this happening all the time. I hear this happening. I used to say this myself. I'm kind of embarrassed by it, but this idea of using the words good and bad when referring to food. So like, oh, I've been being so bad lately. I have to get back on track on Monday and start being good again. They're eating foods or making food choices that diet culture labels or deems acceptable and quote unquote right, versus making the food choices that they want, the thing that is going to be the tastiest, the thing that is going to satisfy them the most. But when we eat foods that taste like cardboard, it turns out they're not that satisfying, and you want to keep eating and you keep thinking about food because you're not satisfied. And there's so much guilt that shows up when people are eating a food that diet culture has labeled as eye roll bad, and the amount of guilt and shame that people feel and try to get back on track and start over Monday, or punish themselves at the gym when food is truly morally neutral. Food doesn't have the ability of making a person a good person. Food doesn't have the ability of making a person a bad person. But because of diet culture, there is guilt and shame and regret associated with foods. And I just think that there should be no place where food choices make you feel like you're a good or bad person. So circling back to this fourth bullet point of the definition of diet culture, I'm just going to briefly reread it and remind you. A system of beliefs that oppresses people who don't match up with the supposed picture of health, which disproportionately harms women, femmes, trans folks, people in larger bodies, people of color, people with disabilities, damaging both their mental and physical health. So that first word, oppresses, or oppression, kind of a reminder to myself. Oppression kind of loosely is defined as unjust treatment that is cruel and controlling. I definitely see diet culture or the pressure to be thin controlling people, and it's cruel and it's unjust. But how I explain this when I'm working with clients is diet culture does disproportionately harm some people more than others. Meaning, I'm not saying that men don't feel pressure to have the perfect body, but women feel that pressure more. It's more heavily weighing on them. And then there's intersections of this pressure, which means if you are a woman and a woman in a larger body, you have intersections of oppression. So you would feel that pressure even heavier than someone who is just a woman that is thin. If you happen to be a person of color and identify as a woman and you're in a larger body, those are like three intersecting areas of oppression. So they're going to feel that even more so. And then people with disabilities. So all of these different areas that people feel oppressed in, they intersect and they feel the pressures of diet culture, the pressure to achieve thinness, follow these X, Y, and Z food rules. They feel them even more so as they navigate this world. That's basically diet culture in a nutshell. I hope that gives you a really clear and broad understanding of everything that diet culture entails and how regularly it's showing up in your life and impacting your thoughts and behaviors. And I always, one of the first things I do with clients when I work with them is, okay, from now until forever, for the rest of your life, you need to see diet culture and call it out and not allow yourself to become a victim of it ever again. So sometimes it can be helpful for people to have something that they say every time they see diet culture showing up. Maybe it's every time they see it, they roll their eyes. I knew somebody who every time they were confronted with diet culture, they would say, that's bullshit. So they were literally saying to themselves almost all day long, that's bullshit, that's bullshit, that's bullshit. Which is kind of like your blinders are off now. See it, call it out, never allow yourself to be victimized by it again. I could go on and on about different ways diet culture shows up in people's lives, but just off the top of my head, if you're in the practice of stepping on the scale every single day and then allowing that number to dictate how you feel or how you're going to eat that day, that's a way that diet culture is showing up in your life, and you're giving your power to a number on the scale instead of being selfish and protective of your power. Or if you're making food choices in the pursuit of intentional weight loss, that's a way diet culture is showing up. If you think that you are a failure because you regained weight, that's diet culture. Diets actually aren't designed to help people lose weight. Diet culture needs return customers. It's not you that failed. It's the diet that failed, and it's designed to fail so that you will keep spending your hard-earned money pursuing something that research clearly shows is not possible for the majority of people. If you have some thoughts and feelings that are coming up as you hear this definition, that's normal. You should have some thoughts and feelings coming up. And if you'd like to talk more, I'm available, and feel free to schedule a free Zoom consultation with me at my website. That's the show. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, I'd be so grateful if you take a minute to follow or subscribe to the podcast and leave a rating and review on Apple, Spotify, or whatever podcast platform you're listening on. It helps others to find the podcast and continue spreading this important information to more people who need to hear it. This podcast is made possible by paid supporters at patreon.com/makepeacewithfood. They're truly what keep this show going so that I can pay my assistant, editor, producer, and allow me to keep sharing all of this content and doing this important and needed work with you all. Go to patreon.com/makepeacewithfood to sign up for as little as $3 per month. Make Peace with Food is hosted by me, Emily Lavoie. It's produced and edited by Jake Lamore at Pathfinder. Thank you so much for your support.